Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Here we are. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to post-Leicester, Berardi and Cork. I'm sure we're all in relatively high spirits, gentlemen, but how are we both doing? Have we both had a good weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, very good weekend. Yeah.
Good, good. And,
yesterday
it did. Yesterday? Oh, yeah, of course it did. Sorry, mate. Yeah, I was just saying before you came on, Carl, actually, that I feel a bit ill this weekend. I had a few drinks Friday, obviously, and I felt a bit sick yesterday. I'm not usually one to, I mean, I get hangovers and stuff, but I know if it's an hangover, but I was sick yesterday, physically sick. And I sent a picture to my mate of my actual sick in the toilet. He said, "What is wrong with you? I'm trying to eat my breakfast." I don't know why that's relevant anyway, but we'll run an intro and we'll get into a bit of talk about the Leicester game.
Hi, this is Don Matteo, and you are listening to the Ought to Know Better podcast. Let's do this.
You look like fucking Brolin, you're a Leeds hating bastard.
Look like some sort of fucking weird floating head. No.
You utensil player a bit, innit?
I mean, I feel a bit right, dickhead.
Nothing spectacular, really.
Nothing spectacular. And I always do this, and we're going to have to change that last statement that comes from Jay, because every time we go live, I just repeat what Jay says because I think it's relevant. Because if we haven't been spectacular, it's relevant. But if we have, it's like the polar opposite. So it gives us a talking point. But yeah, very, very spectacular end to Friday night, I think. And yeah, absolutely fantastic. Let's start. First things first. Lineup, Stuart. Is it what's to be expected of Daniel Farke's Leeds now? Are we becoming a little bit obvious, I suppose, with our lineups? You know, it doesn't tend to change things up at the minute.
He's the classic don't change a winning team kind of manager, isn't he? He's very much, I hate to use this word because Jesse ruined it on us, but he's very much a kind of a vibes kind of manager in terms of when the players are playing well, don't ruin it. You know, keep that momentum moving. Maybe momentum more than vibes. Let's not use vibes again. Yeah, maybe momentum. But
a lot of managers all that.
Yes, well, yeah, Christensen. Christensen's poster boy celebrating a corner. Yeah, he very much just picked the same team if it's winning. If the lads are doing well. Although I think after the Leicester game now, he's got a couple of question marks. I think because the lads that came off the bench were very, very good. So that'll make him have to think about things, kind of Robert specifically. But yeah, I mean, look, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And the difference between, you can be predictable, I think, but I suppose it's like saying that Pep Guardiola's sides are predictable as well. They're going, yeah, but they're still really, really good. You still have to be better than them to beat them. And that's the issue other teams have with Leeds this year, is that you know a team is going to be picked, but it's a very good team. So you've still got to go out and try and beat them, and most teams can't.
No, I mean, I completely agree. And we've proven now, obviously, over two fixtures this season, we've beaten arguably the best of the rest in the league. I think the only time we haven't proven that is against Southampton. And look, Cal, earlier on in the season there was question marks about Daniel Farke, and not from myself, but there was obvious questions being asked of him at particular stages of the season when we'd been through that tough run at Christmas and even a bit earlier on in the season as well. What stage? I mean, surely the questions have all been answered.
I think so. I think his credentials in the championship speak for themselves. Won it twice. He's now got the highest win percentage of any championship manager since they've started recording Opta stats or something along them lines. I think I was kind of on the fence a bit when we were about to announce him, I'll be honest. I think a lot of us maybe were because of the performance and record he had in the Premier League. But when you look into the facts behind that, you know, they spent 25 million in two seasons in the Premier League. You can't expect to spend that money and stay up. Everyone knows going up that the Premier League it's unbelievably competitive in the bottom half. Whatever about the top half, you need to be realistic as a team where you are and what the squad is and everything like that. And I've always said that the bottom six and the top six, the bottom six of the Premier League and the top six of the Championship, there's very little between them. Very little between them. And I think if you can measure your performances on how you get on in the Championship, it's usually a good yardstick to where you need to kind of go then with bringing in certain types of players in different areas. But I think he's more than answered his doubters in the sense that he had one of the most difficult starts to a season where he didn't even know what his final squad was going to be until the end of August. Granted, it was two players that wanted out and Willie was kind of sitting on the fence and in the naughty step, you know. But to say what he's done and how he kept his calm and a clear head throughout that whole month and leading up to it, I think, yeah, you can't really fault him now at the moment. I think he's proven what he's worth, and as if when we go up, and we need to back him properly. Like,
yeah, I think that's a fair reflection for me. I think, and I think as Leeds fans, we you know, at the end of this last season, start of this, we probably got a little bit of ahead of ourselves. You know, we were thinking more about will Daniel Farke be the right man because we're going to get promoted. We were a little bit, running before we could walk. You know, we have a job to do in the Championship before we even get there. So we need to sort of cross that bridge. Joe, do you think Farke has changed anything this season and that's seen a bit of a turn in events? I think obviously the one thing that that was pissing a lot of fans off in a word was his timing of substitutions and things. Now I think he's probably manipulated that somewhat and actually he notices now if a change does need to be made sooner. Do you think that's fair?
I think he's starting to trust the squad a lot more. I think we've seen, I keep going back to the Stoke game. That was when he rotated and it didn't work. And I think when Gruev came in, Anthony came in, Nonto came in, it just didn't work in that game. And I think he had question marks over whether he trusted the squad. Gellhardt earlier on in the season didn't do it for him when he gave him his chances as well. And you think maybe he just didn't trust the bench. I was kind of saying coming into January, either he starts using his bench properly, or if he's not going to use it, then he clearly doesn't trust the personnel that's on that bench, and you need to get him a better bench. You need to get him better players so he can utilize that better. What I think we've seen since the turn of the year is players have come in. Willie has come in when he got a run of games and did a job, and Anthony's been good in moments in the second half of the season. Well, Gruev's come in and been phenomenal in midfield, and I think now he's starting to look at that bench and thinking, yeah, I do trust these lads a bit more. And now the players that have come out can't get back in. So... Mm-hmm. He's got Dan James on the bench. We know he trusts Dan James. He's got Pat Bamford this weekend on the bench. We know he trusts Pat Bamford. So all of a sudden, he's now got a bench that he can use a bit more. And I think he likes to leave it as long. He trusts the team on the park. So like if it gets to 70, 75 minutes. And I'm saying this now, but I will be the same person shouting on the television at 72 minutes, make a sub. But at the same time, he likes to give them as long as they can to fix it themselves because he trusts them. Against Leicester, I think he saw, we need a spark here. It's not working right now the way it is. He makes the changes. All of a sudden, that spark kicks in. So I think it's horses for courses with him now. I think he's starting to realise there's some players here that he does trust an awful lot more. But Luke, going back to the start of the season stuff, I was one of the people. I wasn't a fan at all. Didn't want him. Wanted Corberan. I very much wanted Carlos Corberan. I wanted an attack-minded manager. I said the same things that you've highlighted. I said... His record in the Premier League is shocking if we get back to the Premier League. And again, nearly discounting the Championship completely as a season and going, when we're in the Premier League, blah, blah, blah. And I said this on my channel yesterday when I was doing the review. I kind of said, if you can't park your bias and look at the facts, it's a really sad thing to have. Because again, I said Glenn Kamara was an average footballer at the start of the season. I said that I didn't want Daniel Farke getting charged. He wouldn't do it in the Premier League. I said all those things. But I'm okay to be wrong. And I'm kind of happy to be wrong, because if I'm wrong, it means Leeds are doing the right things. And I'm okay with that. That is always the case. I'll always be wrong. I love that. So you can't argue with the facts in front of you. Daniel Farke has turned this around. I have been skeptical about some of the things he said about the young players. I've been skeptical about his substitutions. But you can't argue what he's done. And right now, this team is cooking. This team is playing lovely brand of football. They've got heart. They've got character. They can come on back in games when they're behind. You can't ignore it. There are still people trying to ignore this and to drive home that the narrative. And it's, that's the sad bit for me, because he is doing something special right now. Will it continue? I don't know. I still think we'll drop points between now and the end of the season, but I think everybody else will as well. I don't think we go unbeaten to the end of the year. We might. But you have to look at everything. Same with Pat Bamford, same with Ilan Meslier. If you can't just say they played well when they played well, it's a sad kind of thing to have. I mean, I've seen a couple of people who just keep doubling down on their opinion. I saw one guy yesterday who appears to have been mourning Leeds' win over Leicester while everybody else is going nuts, because it didn't fit what he wanted to say. The first tweet he put out was Meslier shit. Before nothing had happened, Meslier had a cracking game. Has had two very big games against Leicester this year. And then by the end of the game, it was like, oh, that was a good result. And like everyone else is going, okay, yeah. And he's there going, yeah, that was a good result. Like, dude, seriously, if you can't enjoy the moment, you can't do that. And that's the thing for me. Whatever has happened before, whatever's happened in the past, we've gone through some shit. We really have gone through shit. If you can't take a moment at the weekend, this weekend, to stop, relax, and just enjoy what happened and enjoy the moment for what it is, absolutely, exactly, Carl. Breathe it in. There's something wrong with you. There's something seriously wrong with you.
And you know what? Just speaking about social media and shit. So for those of you who saw my social media, I got crapped on by a bird on Friday night just before the game. So I'm gonna be out dancing under cathedrals before every other game. just with my mouth open. But just on social media as well. Obviously, we've seen a massive meltdown, Leicester fans. So much so that I don't think we've seen from any fan base really this year. We've had a few.
Yeah.
But Jay sums it up perfectly. The meltdown on X, saying that from where they've dominated. And look, we'll come on to talking about actually how the game shaped up in a second. But Jay says here they had 40% possession at Elland Road, which it sounds about right, and that's what most teams get. But they looked far better with that ball than most teams that have come to Elland Road for me. So let's delve into the actual performance a little bit more and a few of the performances. So how I saw it, and bear in mind I'd had a few drinks, was that I felt we started the game quite well. But I think Leicester took control probably midway through the first half and then kept control pretty much right up until about 60, 65 minutes. And I don't think we really had much. Obviously, we had a couple of chances, but I felt they did. They came and had a game plan, and they played really, really well. They pressed as well, you know, they forced the mistakes. But I don't ever think that they looked leagues above or that they should have been, was it 17 points in front of us at one stage this season, I think?
In January.
17 in January, was it?
12th of January, there were 17 points ahead of us. And by the 24th of February, it was 6.
That's mad.
Hell of a turnaround.
Absolutely mad.
That's what I'm saying. How can you ignore that and keep saying Daniel Farke is not the manager, not the right guy? Yeah. How can you ignore that?
Yeah.
When the facts are really punching you in the face, there, it's you're, hard to. You're,
no. Yeah. No, honestly, yeah. He's not. He's crap. No, honestly, he's not.
Yeah. I just don't like. You mentioned Meslier there. He made two big saves in that game at 1-0. And to say that people are like, oh, he's this and he's that. Like, I get, you know, last season was, he did make a lot of mistakes last season, individual errors. But I've said it before, like, I've played in goal a few times back when I was playing at home, and you're only as good as the defence in front of you. If you're facing 30 shots a game, that means your defence in front of you isn't doing their job. And therefore, you're not going to save all 30 shots. You know, so I think the narrow-mindedness sometimes takes over, like you were saying, Jaron. It's just blinkers on. It's like, last season has scared me now. I don't want anything at all. No, he's crap. And I'm like, give the guy a break. Like, he's 23. He won't reach his peak till he's about 33.
I know, right?
You know, that's the thing, like. And he'll probably play up until his late 30s, you know, and be an absolute world beater, like. But I just think that with the state of all that and their fans last night or yesterday even, it's a guy there saying, I reposted on Twitter, he said, oh, Ipswich gave us a harder game. And I was kind of looking at it and I just retweeted it. And I was like, put the two games against Leicester and the two games against Ipswich. And I was like, but you said they'd give you a harder game, yet we've absolutely thumped G over two legs and you have nothing. Granted, they were, you know, they were the better team for a majority of the game on Friday night. But people are quick to forget we had three gilt-edged opportunities in the first 10 minutes. We could have been 3-1 up at halftime. This is the other side of the coin. If our finishing was more clinical, like Nanto should have hit it first time instead of trying to cut back inside onto his left. He was on his favourite right foot. This is the one thing I kind of, from a coaching perspective, I don't understand. Is like you have an outside of your right foot as well. You don't necessarily have to try and hit it with the instep. Use the outside of your foot. Pirro should have put that header in. And then the other one Pirro had, my mate said it was on his weaker right foot. My opinion is if you're a professional footballer, you don't have a weaker foot. That's just my opinion. I've always kind of stood by that. I've always, any coaching sessions I've ever done, I've done full coaching sessions where each player has to use their weaker foot. And it's just that simple. Can't be blaming stuff like that, especially not at the level he's playing at. Should be putting them away 12 yards out.
But, I agree. Are you talking about the Dakar chance here?
No, I'm talking about Pirro.
Oh, Pirro, sorry. Even better option in that particular instance was actually to square it to Somerville, who was totally unmarked. But
or let it run across your body and hit it with your left foot because it was moving. Just let it run across and have a go at it. But I agree.
And somebody mentioned, I think it was Bren earlier on, mentioned that if he was going to make any change moving forward. So I think probably the negative he took out of that game was actually Joël Pirro. I don't know if that's, I mean, do you think it's fair? Would you agree with that? I think obviously he offers something completely different to what Paddy Bamford offers. And we've said this all along, and we, you know, no matter how much we drill it into us, he's never going to be what Paddy Bamford brings to a team. He's a completely different option and a different style of player. Now, with Paddy obviously not being 100%, he is our only option other than Matteo Joseph. Now, if you put Matteo Joseph in over Joël Pirro, what does that say to Joël Pirro? We've just spent 12 million quid on or whatever it was. And you know, how much further could that dent a man's confidence? So I understand why Pirro's playing. And I actually don't think he's as bad as what we expect. I think the expectation often outweighs reality with him. He's got 11 league goals this season already.
Yeah.
For a player that's not doing that well, I don't think that's a bad return.
Yeah, we saw how long it took Rodrigo, nearly two seasons, to settle in before he started finding a bit of form. Obviously, he was being played out of position a little bit similar to the way Pirro is as well. I'm not questioning Daniel Farke, but I don't buy this. He's not an out-and-out striker thing. I think if you're a striker, you're a striker. I think it's as simple as that, you know. But we do, I was on Joe's pod last night and I said it there. I was like, we do play completely differently when either Pirro or Bamford are on. Pirro isn't a bad player by any means and he hasn't got bad overnight. It's just his role seems to be a little bit different to the way he expects Bamford to play. I don't think Pirro's as effective at running the lines and finding space in behind the back, you know, in the channels and stuff like that. I think he needs the ball to feet. I think he's more of a Becchio type of player where he needs the ball to feet, back to goal, playing it off and then trying to turn and spin in behind. I think he's more similar to Becchio than anything else. But when Bamford comes on then, Rutter's got the freedom of the park. And we saw that on Friday night. He was marked out of it. Couldn't really get anything in a forward motion himself in Somerville. As soon as Bamford came on, two centre-backs occupied, done. Different style of play altogether. He's on the ball far more. And
I think it's worth noting Leicester did a real good job on Rutter until Bamford came on. A real good job. They neutralised him completely. But just going back to the Pirro then. Earlier on, obviously, in the season, Farke did the press conference that lasted 9 or 10 minutes about why why he was a number 10 and why we were playing him a number 10. But you say there, you see him more as a Becchio type number 9, which is interesting because I think Firpo were, sorry, not Firpo, bloody hell. I mean, he can play anywhere, but I think Pirro would work better in a front two, an actual front two.
Or a false nine. As a false nine, even maybe as well. I think that's probably his natural position as a false nine, where he has a bit of freedom to drop in. He likes to drop a little bit as well. But the other issue we said about Joel Pirro as well, and maybe it's because of his big Dutch head that we don't realize this. He's 24.
Yeah.
He's really young. I didn't think he was that young until I actually looked it up. I was like, Jesus, he's only a kid. Like, he's 24 years of age. And he's had some incredible seasons behind him already. He's only going to get better. I said at the start of the season that I didn't think he necessarily fitted how Daniel Farke likes to play. He'll still score goals because he is a good striker, but he's a striker. And I completely agree with Carl. You're a number nine or you're not a number nine. You know, maybe it's a nine and a 10 up front like Becchio had with Beckford. But the problem he has now is that nobody plays with two up front anymore, because you do that, you sacrifice a man in the middle of the park. Every other team's going to play three in the middle, and then you've got your own problems there. The other thing as well is he doesn't occupy center backs the way Paddy does. Paddy will sit on the last man and will stay as high. And even this part, we give out a bit of Paddy when he gets caught, but he didn't get caught against Leicester with no offsides. But Paddy will go offside. We'll literally go behind the defender. So they have to go keep looking over their shoulder. Like, where is he? Because, you know, he's going to pop back out at some point. Paddy will go offside deliberately. Joel Pirro doesn't do that. He likes to go wide. He likes to come short. He doesn't press as quick. His activation for pressing isn't as quick as Paddy. I think one of the things I noticed in the first half where it was, there was players close to him at times where you'd hope he'd just make a little sprint and go and press the ball. And he kind of just tries to shadow them into an area, but Paddy will make that run into them. Like, I still think if we go back to the Premier League next year, Leeds need to go and look at getting a proper number nine, because again, Paddy will have injuries. Paddy will have off days as well. I don't know if Pirro fits this system just yet. He will learn over time. We've seen, and again, I keep saying this, don't just gotta be so careful not to keep writing players off so quickly. Again, what Rodrigo has done as well, like, player that's playing as number 10 gets his first season as a number 9 for Leeds, and he's phenomenal. And tons of players in the current squad, Dan James, loads of players, you could say were written off, you know, and I've got better and got better. And I think Daniel Farke will mould Joel Pirro into the striker that he needs him to be, and he'll learn. He's still young, he can learn. The big thing for me is going to be with Joel Pirro, can he learn? Can he adapt? Can he change his game? And he's going to have to do that if he wants to be a top striker. And he's got all the aspects to be a top striker. He is a good finisher when his head's, you know, clear, or when he's confident. But he might need a couple of chances to get, again, it goes back to the Bamford stuff we had the last time we were in the Championship. He needs two or three chances before he puts one in the back of the net. Somebody else made a point, it might have been a square ball, made this point. They would have said, he scores when Leeds have scored. So when the pressure's kind of off a little bit to break the deadlock, that's when he scores. And maybe he's feeling the pressure. You know, look at Conor Roberts' celebrations when Leeds scored. Look at the comments he made about a big club. This is my first big club. You know, what a comment to make when you're on loan from Burnley. But it is. It's massive. It is massive. And there is a huge amount of pressure on any player that comes into Elland Road. And it's a heavy shirt to wear. And it is. That Leeds jersey is a very heavy jersey to wear. Some players have thrived in it. Some players have buckled under that shirt. So he needs some time. Leeds probably should have gone out and bought an absolute number nine as well as him. I agree with the point you made about Matteo Joseph, but I think Joel Pirro has time. I think he offers different aspects. I think when he's come off the bench for Leeds, he's actually looked very good. I think, again, maybe when the pressure's off a little bit. But I trust Farke to deal with him and help him and help him to grow, and he'll get better as time goes on. He is as you said, Luke, you don't go from being, you know, 20 goal a season striker in the Championship to a bad player overnight. It doesn't happen. You're not the main cog in the wheel anymore. You're just one of many cogs in the wheel. Yeah. You've got to adapt that game to fit that style. And he'll get there. He'll get there.
You're on mute, Luke. You're on mute,
mate. Yeah, I completely agree. Sorry, I was just sorting my dog out. So, completely agree. Let's start with what I felt. I mean, it's not so much of a negative. We'll get those out of the way and we can start talking about, you know, the real positives from Friday night. But We almost expected Junior Firpo to struggle against a good winger, didn't we? And I felt he did struggle a little bit. I still didn't think he looked as bad as what potentially he could have done or as we expected, but it was quite apparent that he had his number. Was it Mavididi on his side, I think, or Fatawu? I can't remember. One of the two.
Fatawu. I thought he was okay at the start. I thought he started really well. I really did think he started. And I've been very critical of Junior Firpo over the last couple of years. I've said out straight, I don't think he's a good defender. I think he's very good going forward. He's a very good wing back. Very, very good wing back. But I did think he started the game quite well. And I think then just in the second half, he had that little wobble where he nearly gave a ball away where they ran through, clean through on goal, and then he fell over and he kicked the ball out of play. Then he was went to receive a pass and he missed it and went out of play again. And I just think his head maybe went a little bit at that point. But again, it was there was a lot of pressure at that moment in the stadium as well, you know. So, but I think it was a mixed bag for him. But I thought he started fine. And I think he's okay. It was going to be his biggest test because that's a Premier League winger he's coming up against. And next year he's going to have to deal with that if we do go up. So, but I thought it was a mixed bag. I wouldn't say he had a bad game. And I would definitely not put any of the goal we conceded. You wouldn't stick it on him. I don't think they created a huge amount from his side either, which is unusual because usually the ball's around the outside of him. They seem to come down the other side or through the middle. So, yeah, it was a mixed night for him. There was a couple of Firpoisms towards the end of getting taken off. And his reaction to getting taken off was interesting as well. He got really annoyed and he smashed a water bottle into the ground and people were saying it was directed at Daniel Farke. It wasn't. That was frustrating.
With his performance, wasn't it? Yeah.
That was pure frustration. He went off and we leads 1-0 down. So, and you're okay with that because that shows he gives a shit. That means shows he cares about this. You know, smashing that bottle on the ground and going, you know, that's him annoyed at himself. Farke said it after the game. He came straight over to him afterwards and apologised. Like, no need. Really? No need to felt at me.
He's very slowly turning into a very, and it sets, I mean, it's quite contrasting in the comparisons we made over the last year or two, but very slowly turning into a likable guy, you know, an actual fan favourite. And people, I mean, look, he's always going to struggle against somebody defensively, that you know, against a good side who can open him up a little bit. He does lack pace for a left back as well, I feel, but. Hey, it's Junior Firpo. And what a great time, actually, to bring in Junior Firpo's biggest admirer. Oh, he's gone.
Oh, he's gone.
He's just gone. Oh, he's back. He's back. Junior Firpo fan club, Mr. Joe Wayman. How are we doing?
How you doing, mate? Sorry, right? My son, what? This is going to be a struggle. Because when he sees me on the mic, it's game over.
Just Joe. Junior.
Come on, Dad. Right, there we go. Right, now this is going to be a struggle. I'll be back.
No. Brilliant. Oh, well, we'll just take him out for a sec. We'll come back on to Firpo because I know how much Joe loves Junior Firpo. But let's move on to a couple of positives then. Look, first of all, the result. I mean, what a result, firstly. Did, realistically, either of you see that coming at 1-0 down at that stage of the game?
No. Honestly, no. I was sitting on the edge of my sofa, kind of just, I'd gone from sitting back on my sofa and I was kind of just sitting on the edge of kind of going, it's going to be a set piece. It's going to be something we need. And they kept getting chances. And then you're thinking in your head, this is the first half of the season again. It's where we just didn't take our opportunities to get ahead and now it's going to come back and bite us. But when they start missing some chances, you start to think, well, maybe, because they missed some big. Dak is one that straight in front of the goal. And
what was he trying to do with it?
Yeah, and then Mavadidis when he bends around the post. And then Amelia makes two massive saves as well. Two really good saves. But when the goal went in, Luke, I said that on my channel yesterday, I've had a couple of tough weeks with work. I've had a couple of tough weeks with my health. And talk about the stress coming off my shoulders, man. There was nobody in my house bar my dog for the first goal. And I lost it. I in the middle of my floor screaming at the TV. It was the manner of the goal as well. And then from that moment on, it was like, we're going to win this. We didn't stop. And there was another thing that got me as well. 70 minutes into the game, Leicester are time wasting. 83 minutes, Leeds are 2-1 up and Leeds are still bombing forward looking for a third when they should have been going into the corner flag. So, it was a tough one. Someone said I was very emotional on Joe's channel. I was straight after the game. I was very emotional on Joe's channel the other night because again, it's that heart and that character and that bottle that this team seemed to have. Like they had a couple of bad moments in the game. They could have buckled and they didn't. They kept going. But no, I think when we were 1-0 down the way it was going into the 70-odd minute, it was like, yeah, this is probably going to get away from us. And then it didn't. And didn't spectacularly.
So I was watching in a pub in Leafy, Suffolk, and there was the odd Leeds fan, but it was just a pub full of people and there was only really me watching the game. And I was literally, as soon as we scored, I literally jumped up. I made it half of the pub jump out of the skin. And the reason I watched in a pub is because I had an absolute nightmare thinking I was going to be working late, didn't get a ticket. And this is the second time it's happened this season. So I don't know if it's a bit of a superstition, but the two games that I've really wanted to go to that I haven't been able to make are Ipswich at home and Leicester at home. So do I do the same for Southampton or do I go and enjoy myself? I don't know. And we'll probably be up by then, hopefully, anyway.
Well, I'll shut up and let Carol talk, but real quick, talk about superstitions. I was sitting on the sofa. I had this year's white shirt on me watching the game, and went, well, at halftime went, no, this isn't working, and I've got my black Berardi jersey, and I went upstairs and I put on the black Berardi jersey, because every time I've worn that, we've won. It's like, no, that's going on. Back down the stairs and sat down, and then the missus came in, and she was like, you weren't wearing that earlier on. I was like, no, things weren't going our way. I got a bit superstitious. I said, well, you have to wear that for the rest of the season now, don't you? I was like, yeah.
Do you know what, right? I was at the game, and when we won the game, I came home, and I was a bit steaming. Jay dropped me home, thankfully, but I looked at exactly what I had on, down to the jocks and the socks, and I was like, right, that's it now. I'm not a superstitious man, but you're staying clean for the rest of the season, and that's the bottom line. It's like, nah, can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, at 1-0 down going into 80 minutes, I was sure we were going to get our first home loss of the season. I was, you know, I'd prepared for it, and I thought, you know what, so be it. We'll react, and we'll come out the other end. We've had those results happen before, and we've turned it around and whatever else. So I was convinced, and I made peace with it at that stage, and then. What a goal by Conor Roberts, first of all. Why he had no right to be in that position in the box, on the edge of the 6-yard box as a right back. He had no right to be there. Took it really, really well. And the celebration. And like you say, Jerry, he's mentioned it on social media that it's the first big club that he's ever been at. I don't think he's fancying going back to live in Burnley anytime soon or walk around their shopping centre. If they've even got a shopping centre, I don't know. What's in Burnley? Probably not a lot, to be honest, because
nothing's in Burnley. The way out of Burnley, that's it.
Yeah.
My emotions completely flipped on its head, and I was like, we're going to win this now. And it just felt like a game. And Jay, you hit the nail on the head there when you said, we actually carried on going forward, even at 2-1 up, and we should have sat, you know, probably brought a couple of defenders on, sat back, held the ball in the corner. But it just I think it just goes to show the attitude and the belief that's in that squad at the minute. And you know, Ampadu walking down the tunnel, that was a huge, you know, absolutely mocking Maresca. It's just fuel, wasn't it?
Again, I've said this all weekend. You don't give a team any other reason to win outside of 3 points. And he did.
Nah. Yeah.
I think it's the same. I think we're seeing it throughout the top four, bar Farke. We had Russell Martin calling his players out on Tuesday night, saying that there was no fight and no spirit. And then 2 weeks prior, he was saying that they went on such a long winning streak and he can't understand how they're not miles ahead of Leeds. Psychologically, that doesn't bode well for a squad when you're trying to lead them to promotion. That's just like, you can see it starting to play on them a bit. And I think yesterday as well, he refused to shake opposition players' hands, made a beeline for the ref. He's starting to crack in a big way. And I think, like I said it on Joe's last night, I think Hull beat Southampton in the playoff final. Oof. That's my prediction. I think so. Like Hull have got momentum now at the moment. Granted, they only drew with West Brom yesterday, but that's still a promotion rival that they're drawn with, which is a good thing. It's not a loss. And
On their day, West Brom can be a very good side as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And whether they're home or away, I don't think it really matters. I think as long as the team is putting in a performance, then I genuinely think that Rossoneri has done a great job at Hull. I think without a doubt they would win the play. Rossignol or whatever the fuck it was.
No, you said it right that time.
Rossignol.
That's Inter Milan, isn't it? Yeah. Milan, Rossoneri.
Rossoneri. I was watching James on the old football Italia there earlier on, the old school. But yeah, that's how I think that'll go. But back to us anyway. I think Farke is keeping his powder dry. I think one of the sneakiest comments that he made all over the last couple of weeks was, yes, I think Leicester will finish in the top two.
Yeah.
Perfect. Don't need to say anything else. That alone is going to play on minds all day long. I think that is brilliant. Without trying to play a psychological game, I think that's just perfect.
What do you make of these wild claims that Leicester fans are making, that they had a tougher game against Ipswich and that we're not the best side they've played this season? By the way, Ipswich and Leicester have only lost 10 games between them all season, and four of them have come from Leeds United.
Bullshit. It's bullshit. It's bullshit. Out straight, it's bullshit. You can say what you want. That's like saying somebody like, oh, I'm getting to you. No, you're not. I'm fine. I'm fine. You're not getting to me. I'm fine. I'm not getting to you. Yeah, clearly I am. Clearly I am. You know,
we're really under the skin, aren't we?
We are under the skin. But like, I think the funny thing about it is they put us under their skin. We didn't, at no point were we going out looking for them. Like Southampton fans, the Southampton stats page put the one out about Leeds not being in the title race. They did that. We didn't put that post out. They did that. Leicester fans mocking us before the game. Their players going on social media right before the game on Instagram talking about how the game was going to go on Friday night. They did that. Not Leeds fans. Like Leeds fans will come after you if you give us a reason to come after you. They've all done that. Leeds were just getting on with their job. We were doing our own thing. We were plodding along. We were trying to get the automatic spots if we could, but we were focused on promotion. We weren't focused on the league title. We were all saying, most of us were saying all year, Leicester have the title. They've been the best team all season. They deserve the title. You know, Ipswich have been brilliant this season, record setting pace, all this kind of stuff. We didn't go after their fan base, and their fan base are going nuts now, and they're directing it back at us to say, you know, Leeds are like, it was Leeds fans. Like, it wasn't. You guys brought this on yourselves. Your managers brought this on themselves. All Maresca had to say in his press conference was, of course, it's a big game. It's top two. It's the best two teams in the league. It's a big game for everybody. That's all he had to say. All he had to say, but he doesn't. He has a little dig. You know, Russell Martin's comments as well. He's a little dig. I mean, 80% possession Southampton had yesterday. 80% and lost. That's his reaction. Instead of coming out and going, look, it's one of those days at the office, it's Millwall, they're that kind of a team. They can nick a goal off you, they can go direct, you know, they're that kind of a team. We'll move on. He hasn't. He's reacted really badly to it. And as Carl said, calling out his players. Maresca saying after the game on Friday night, something's broken. This isn't normal. Like, you're going, what do you think of all the times to shut up now? But then you've got Daniel Farke, who's just kind of saying, every time we've had a wobble, Farke's taken the blame himself. He's put it on his shoulders and he said, look, doesn't change the goal, 2 points a game. We keep moving forward game by game. Calm as you like, super professional, but he's been here before. He's done it before and he knows what is needed to do it again because he's done it twice on the bounce. This is the time of season where Daniel Farke's teams have peaked, this time of the season. If you look at his record of 2 years, he's got promoted. Joe Wayne will tell you better than I can, but the 2 years they got promoted, I think they went unbeaten in the last 12 games to get promoted both times. I think one they went 1-0 every single game. The second they drew a couple, maybe lost one. He knows what it takes. The other two, like I said this on the Not Another Leeds podcast on Friday night, I don't believe Maresca will be manager of Leicester next season. Because I think when he goes into the Premier League and he starts losing more games, because you will in the Premier League, you're going to lose more games. I think he'll get rattled. I think he is rattled. He's shown what kind of a manager he is. He's a reactive manager. And it happened to him in Serie A. When he went over there, it didn't work for him. Got sacked. Didn't work. And I think when he's losing, he's not happy. He's been in a position all season this year where he can win games and he can be cocky and he can be arrogant. He's not Pep Guardiola. He might try and be Pep Guardiola, but he doesn't carry himself like Pep Guardiola. Hmm. Not even close to it. So they're all doing it, you know. Funnily enough, the Ipswich manager, McKenna, is probably the one that's the calmer of all of them right now. And I think he's done a stunning job at Ipswich. I watched him again to weekend. They play lovely football. They really play good football. I was really hoping Crystal Palace were going to take him away from them because that would have been them. Done, I would have thought. But I'd be more worried about Ipswich now than anybody else, to be completely honest. I think they've got the easier running as well. But they, as I said yesterday, again, they have their own kind of pressure. And that pressure is don't lose. Don't lose. Because if you lose...
They're leaking goals as well.
I mean, Rotherham pushed him the other night.
Yeah, they're conceding far too many and expecting these late charges all the time in games. Like, granted, we had a late charge on Friday night, like, but that's not the norm for us. Like, we try and have some form of a lead and control the game as quickly as possible, but they just concede left, right, and centre. And I think McKenna, like you said, Jarrah's done a fine job there. Like, he's done it on a fairly tight budget as well, by all accounts. Coming up from League One, you know, the promotion money isn't as lucrative as it, you know, is going up from the Championship. But I don't think he'll be there next season if they don't get promoted. I think he'll be snapped up.
Yeah. One of the things I would say about Ipswich, living not far, the majority of people around here are Ipswich fans where I live, and one thing they say is, I mean, I'm not in any way comparing McKenna to Bielsa, but they have one way of playing football, and that's it. Yeah. And once teams work that out, which they have been worked out a number of times this season, they don't have any plan B. They don't know how to change it up. And it feels very, very reminiscent. And under Bielsa, we did it really, really well, whereas they're doing it well. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
There are similarities between the two of them. Because the one big one is, can you coach a team to be better than they are? So you've got I never say that Pep Guardiola is a great coach. He's a very good manager. He's an excellent manager. He can manage big personalities and get performances in them. But can you coach a lesser team to be better than they are? And that's the measure of a really good coach. Kerry McKenna has done this. The first season that Bielsa had Leeds, he took a team from 15th place with minimal additions and made them a top three team in the division overnight. McKenna's done the same with Ipswich. He's taken a team that was in League One and was struggling. He put young players in there. He's trusted them when he plays a certain style, and he has coached that team to be a better team. And he's shown that this year. Leicester have a very, very good squad. All Maresca has to do is manage the personalities in that dressing room and get performances out of them. Has he coached them to be a better team? I don't think so. You know, but yeah. McKenna has absolutely done that with Ipswich.
Yeah, agreed. And one of the other things I'd just like to say about Ipswich fans is, like, I mean, Ipswich as a club is, it's funny how when they were 10, 12 points ahead of us, it was like, but they're the best for this last group. Now we're on equal points, better on goal difference. It's parachute payments, Leeds United, billionaire, championship billionaires, Leeds United only on the same points as Little.
£400 million squad and all this.
Where did he get these numbers from? Because it was at the whole Leeds squad, I think, is 70 million. The entire squad is like 70 million. The front, did Chris Somerville cost us 40 million? I think he cost us a million and a half, didn't he? Willie Nanto cost us what? A million and a half as well. Yeah. Where are you getting £70 million from?
Yeah, I don't know.
I've just got a very quick video to share. Based on, I know we've been talking about opposition managers. Lord Ash put this together on Twitter. You might have seen it, you might not. But he's put together a little bit of montage from different fan pages and things. So I haven't asked for his permission, but I'm sure he won't mind.
It's a huge, huge, huge
Can you hear that?
For them. For us, it's one more game.
Hold up. Wait a minute.
Tonight, Leeds are taking on Leicester at home at Elland Road, and this game is massive.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
For us, it's one more game.
Leeds United, Leicester City, got it the wrong way around there. Match day vlog at Elland Road, 8 p.m. kickoff, first versus second, and our hardest game of the championship season. It was always going to be down at Elland Road, lose an Ipswich win, and we're 6 points away from third. Win, and we are 12 points clear of Leeds. So it's a massive, massive one.
For us,
season defining, really. If we win here, we're up. Honestly, if we win here, we're up.
Our runaway travels to Elland Road as league leaders Leicester City tries to take on second place Leeds United in the Friday night football in the championship in a top of the table clash. And what a big game this one is.
For us, it's one more game.
To get onto the coaches, to go to Elland Road for the big match tonight against Leeds United.
For us, it's one more game.
Thank you.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another video on the channel. Today is the big one, Leeds United away at Elland Road.
For us, it's one more game.
The Dossers.
So, yeah, I never realised how much I look like Tyson Fury until now, you know.
I let you have that one. I get that all the time and let you keep it.
I definitely don't get that one.
I mean, from a Oreska to play it down, all their fans know exactly what that game meant. And I think that's exactly what he was doing, trying to play the emotion and the occasion down, I suspect. But look, I think one of the things that's worth noting is we've shown that we can do it in pretty much any situation now this season. We've reacted, you know, we couldn't win away from home, and we thought that was the issue. He's addressed that issue now. We've conceded two goals this calendar year in the league, two goals in the calendar year, in almost 3 months in the league. Sorry, 2 months, in almost 2 months. We're in February, aren't we? Nearly in start match. Yeah, I mean, just on the defence then, look, we've got a left-back who we'd all written off. We've got a centre-back who's a central midfielder. We've got Joe Rodon, who's on loan. And then we've got Archie Gray, who's a 17-year-old centre midfielder. And to have such a good defensive record, I mean, props has to go to not just the squad, but also to the coaching staff, because wildest dreams could we have expected to be in this position, this sort of form and sort of. How many goals have we scored now then? Is that 9? Is that 20 scored? This
26 yeah. or something like that, isn't it? 26 or something like that, yeah. Something nuts.
This calendar year, 20, it was 17, wasn't it? Is it 20 scored, 2 conceded, and 24 or 27 points?
Yeah. So
it's the first time since 1931. I think that we've been on a 9-game
win. Yeah, it's our longest winning streak since 1980. And if we beat Huddersfield next weekend, it'll be a new league record. So even whatever happened to Chelsea during midweek, that's a cup game. But if we beat Chelsea, it'd be our new league record. But nice to beat Chelsea as well.
Yeah, Mr. Dodo's in the comments there. He's
27 points, 22 goals, 2 against. Yeah, absolute madness.
100% win record since the turn of the year. 100%.
And Just a quick one, right? I know we're all a little bit. We talked about superstition there earlier on, and jocks and socks and all sorts. I don't particularly want to hear any of this unlucky away kit talk anymore. I want to put that to bed now, because we can't blame a kit for our failings anymore. And we're winning in them now. We haven't won in the blue one yet, but we've won in the fruit salad one. And I just don't want to see it. Like, get that negative talk away from me now. Just let's all just pull in the same direction and be like, yeah, sound. Nothing to do with the kit. It's how we play on the day. And just be a bit realistic about it. Like,
do you know what? Although I've got superstitions.
Would you look at Jackson's accent?
Yeah. Although I've got superstitions and stuff, I don't believe in all this fate bollocks. Somebody said to me the other day, you've done it now, because I think Southampton were losing it. In fact, it was against, was it Borough they played the other day and got beat? Was it Borough?
Leicester got beat by Borough.
Yeah. Leicester beat by Borough, yeah.
No, it wasn't Leicester then. It was whoever beat Saints. Was it Bristol? This
weekend. Bristol beat them 3-1, yeah.
Yeah, somebody beat Saints today anyway. And I tweeted, because Ipswich were losing. As soon as I tweeted, Ipswich equalised, and then Leicester were losing, and I did the same thing again. Yeah, and it's fair. Like, as if me tweeting through the internet on a computer is going to make any difference in how Southampton attack or the defending team defend. A load of bollocks. Anyway, Carl, right, I've seen a few bits and pieces online about the atmosphere being a myth from Leicester fans, shall we say, up until the 80th minute. Now, you obviously in your usual place in the south stand. I mean, I know for one that it's absolute codswallop, but why don't you just tell us a little bit about how because the amount of people I've spoken to who went to the game have told me how different it felt, how electric it was in comparison. One of the best home nights we've had in a long time. Is that sort of on par with what how would you put it?
To be fair, I was on with Joe last night, and I can understand people being a bit critical, but I try to get the point across that were burnt from the last year and a half in the Premier League. You know, as fans, we've always tried to make as much noise as humanly possible, but we didn't see an awful lot on the pitch last year for us to be making that noise. And with the uncertainty of how we started and all that kind of thing as well, you can understand why it might be a little bit nervous. But I think to say that it was dead up until the 80th minute might be a bit of a stretch. I think there was plenty of singing. It was probably just the cheese in the south stand that would have been singing mainly that I could hear, because I can't hear the cop whenever I'm in the south stand. But I don't think that the atmosphere was as bad as people are making out, especially not as bad as the Leicester fans are making out. I mean, like the way they're talking, you'd swear there was no Leeds fans in the stadium and it was just a behind closed doors game, you know. But the from the minute we got that first goal, I was out of breath from celebrating. I was standing there and I was like, my cardio is absolutely in bits here. I need to sort this out. Like, I was standing there and my hands were on my knees and I was just like, this is not good. Like, this is not good. And I think that just shows that even on our bad days, we're still, you know, we back the team. We know what's going on. We just see it as it is. And I think we're more realistic about what we're like as a fan base than most fans would like to be about their own. Leicester, with their happy clappers and their plastic whatever else and this and that and singing sections and get in the bin with all that, like, you know what I mean? Just make a natural atmosphere, no goal music, do it the old school way. And then if you can do it like that, then fair play to you. But I haven't seen many teams do it like that.
No. Mr. Dodo says his old man could hear the stadium bouncing from Cherwell Hill at the 85th minute, which leads me quickly onto this other video, which I'm sure you've all seen. That I just want to share from absolutely beautiful. It's honestly it's eerie. It's that good. I'll have to find it. So just carry on talking. I thought I had it up, but I moved off.
3 miles away.
That's it.
Sure.
That doesn't give you goosebumps.
Yeah, just while you're looking for that, Luke, sure. Because I haven't watched a home game on the telly for quite a while, a league home game. I'm like,
all right, stop bragging.
No, I'm not saying it in that sense. It's just to kind of get a bit of, like, because like you do have people saying it was dead and it was quiet and it was this and that. How does it sound on the TV? Like, does it, like, are the comments justified or what's the?
Well, you've got to get past the commentary team usually, which is they're a pain in the arse on Sky. And there was a horrible comment made about, not a horrible comment, but a casually racist comment thrown out about the Dutch by Sky commentary at the weekend about, like, Chris Somerville comes from the country that invented pure total football, but they also invented the clog. And you're like, the dick comment, isn't it? The dick comment from Sky. Yeah. Sky know they're going to get a certain chant every time they're at Elland Road. And as far as I'm concerned, the audio is turned down. The only fans I could hear for portions of the game were Leicester fans. And I mean, you could hear nothing else at times. But if you looked at what you were seeing was the South Stand singing, you were seeing scarves going, you were seeing the cop going, you couldn't hear anything. But they were moving. Yeah. Like, so if that's not dialing the audio down, I don't know what is, you know. But they had to put it back up by the end of the game. Like, it was, there was nearly a moment where you could, the sound clicked back on, like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere. It didn't build. It just was an instant thing. So I didn't think it was flat. I didn't think it was flat at all. I thought it was definitely a nervy night. And you expect that. Like, there was anticipation there. There was moments where it did get very quiet because, you know, you're focused on the game because you want to see Leeds turn it around. And I don't buy it for a second. Look, Leicester fans are no fans to talk about atmosphere. They have a manufactured atmosphere. And even at that, it's a crap manufactured atmosphere. Carl's already said about the happy clappers. They've got these little cardboard things that they have to give their fans to shake every week to make a noise. Yeah. You know, anyone who has a singing section or a drum, you know, we're recruiting for a drummer. Why? Because you have no atmosphere. You have none. So, no, look, it's bullshit.
Let's go back to that atmosphere. I found the video. Let's get this shared. Because if you haven't seen it, it is absolutely unbelievable. This is 3 miles away from Elland Road.
Audio up, lads.
the end then as well. Like
that's some noise, isn't it? Some noise. Savage. Yeah, as soon as I saw that video, man, I was like, wow. Like, you just don't appreciate, I don't suppose, actually how loud it is in there and how that noise carries, because you're either in the stadium with the atmosphere or watching it somewhere else, you know what I mean, on telly or in the pub or whatever. Yeah, unbelievable. Somebody said that they watch it on the LUTV because they don't turn the volume. I've lost it anyway. Somebody says they watch it on...
Oh, there it is, yeah. Oh, what? There it is.
And the noise was amazing. So I'm assuming, yeah, obviously, that...
They are doing it, yeah.
Yeah.
They always have. It's been a noticeable thing, like, depending on the team that's playing, but particularly us, it is a noticeable thing, like...
Well, I sat down and watched... Because I wanted to see them lose yesterday. I watched Manchester United and Fulham on the television. Yeah. And I mean, talk about a difference in the tone of commentary. I mean, every time they had a half a chance, then, like, Tommy put a ball about 20 yards wide, but as soon as he wound up for it, the commentator was screaming, "McTominay!" Like it was going in the top corner. And you're going, and we get clog comments from that douchebag looking after the Leeds game. You know what I mean? And we get Don Goodman and Andy Happy Hinchcliffe giggling away in the background to the little in-jokes that they have. You know, that crap, that's what we get. But then you watch the Southampton game and the commentary theme is all, you know, balanced and even and giving it lows for both sides and the atmosphere is coming through the speakers and then Leeds play in Elland Road and the sound is turned down and we have to listen to those two idiots talk about what they did in the car on the way up to the game. You know, it's a crap from Sky. I mean, I didn't agree with an awful lot of what Massimo Cellino did, but kicking Sky out of the stadium, I 100% agreed with. Yeah. And I'd like to see Leeds do something again because it's ridiculous. It's embarrassing with the way they carry themselves.
It's on. That was on par with the Liverpool ban in the Sun as well. I think. Anything like that, where they're clearly being deliberately derogatory towards the club with stuff that they say, and like the one thing I don't get is right. You can always hear it is the Jimmy Savile chants, and they're always loud on TV, but yet nothing ever happens. We sing, you know. I don't agree with a lot of the bad shit, like, but we sing some, you know, response to it. We're the ones who are getting fined, like, but yet the volume isn't up enough for anyone at home to hear it. It's only up enough for Leicester fans to hear it because of where the main TV camera is. You've got all of the radio in there as well and TV commentators, and they're always going to pick up more of the Leicester chanting than they are of the Leeds one because it's in the same bleeding stand and the echo just reverberates. Yeah, yeah.
The other thing with that, Carl, as well, is there was a rule change brought in this year. That was, they were going to penalise clubs for what they called tragedy chanting. If what Jimmy Savile did isn't tragedy, you know, a tragedy thing, what he did to people, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But they were going to fine clubs who were caught doing it. Yeah. I haven't seen anybody be fined for the Jimmy Savile chants this year. And every single game, we were home or away, every single game we have to listen to it. You know,
and we were fined for singing, "We Can See You Holding Hands."
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we were fined for, Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
double
standards, absolutely shocking. Like, yeah, there is an agenda. Like I said, my missus is trying to get her head around it. She keeps referring to Leeds. She's trying to get into Leeds, and I keep saying, like, you have to come over and feel it. She's like, I don't know. I watch you, and I think Leeds gaslight you. And I was like, well, they do, but that's just being a Leeds fan because you go through the shit. So when the good things happen, Jesus Christ, is it worth it? It's worth it when the good stuff comes. So she's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I could do this because she's very similar temperament to me. She'd lose the plot, but. Like, even she kind of looks at it independently and kind of goes, I mean, there's an agenda there, isn't there? Like, you can see.
Yeah.
We're the EFL cash cow, right? Oh. We're everyone's biggest. I mean, look at every time we go to Blackburn are like, yes, you can have the entire side of the pitch, the whole stand, you know, take the whole thing because we'll fill it. You know, I keep saying, if you've got an empty stand, give Leeds fans the tickets, we'll fill it. You know, our away fans are incredible. I don't get to go to, I've never been to an away match, but I have, but I was in the Reading end. Twice, because I got free tickets. I was trying not to be, and I worked in Reading, so I was trying not to be a Leeds fan that day. But I saw it live. The Leeds
didn't have an half and half scarf, did you?
Huh?
Didn't have an half and half scarf with Yap Stam on one side or anything like that.
Or those things at the ground. Them and people that support individual players are what's wrong with football. You know, those the Ronaldo fans who follow him ever, and the USMNT accounts, all those kind of things are the worst parts of football. But yeah, look, it's the way fans we have are incredible. An incredible support. The fan base in general are incredible. I mean, I have to sit in Ireland and watch the games on TV, but I still have a huge amount of pride watching Elland Road when the fans really get behind the team. They're an incredible crowd and they deserve respect for that. But the crap that they have to go through with Sky and other fan bases is embarrassing, you know, and Sky need to sort themselves out. I wish somebody would usurp Sky as the top, because it's turned into banter TV now. You've got like Sky Sports News is like Cockney FM. Like it's ridiculous, right? And then you look at the Soccer Saturday as well, and some of the takes on it, you know, the revisionism on Sky Sports is incredible, especially Gary Neville. He's in mental for changing his opinion halfway through a year and pretending the first opinion never happened in the first place. I'm not a massive Roy Keane fan. I'm from Cork in Ireland, and I'm not a massive Roy Keane fan, but there's times where I just love having him there because he shuts people up, you know? So yeah, I'd love to see Leeds just tell Sky Sports, bin it. You can do one.
Yeah. No, bring I completely back, agree.
The fan zone commentary.
Yeah. Bring that back. That was class.
Bring that back. That was
class. Bring it back.
And give it to Wayneman.
Yeah. Imagine. Just on TV though, I think Wednesday night we're on, is it ITV4 or something silly? Against Chelsea, I think it's a real bizarre channel that we're on anyway. So going down there, Gerb, where do you stand on, I mean, look, we'd all love a good cup run, we'd all love to beat Chelsea, and we know Daniel Farke will probably play a relatively strong squad because he'll want to go toe-to-toe. Where do you stand on this in the position we're in now within the league and the cup, I suppose. Where, I mean, we know what the prerogative, we know where our
priorities. You
know, we know where we've got to be and what the prime goal is this season. And realistically, are we going to go any further in the cup? If we do win, we might get the winner of Maidstone and whoever they've got, or you know, we might get Scum. Nice. We could get, you know, another great away day somewhere else. But for me, I would like to rest a few, and when I say a few, everybody for the Huddersfield game.
Yeah, I've two fears with the momentum we're on right now. The FA Cup becomes a distraction, and the international break derails the momentum, or we get injuries. Like, I would love Leeds to have lots of little hamstring niggles during the international break. The players can't go away. You see every other club do it when it gets to international breaks. Oh, he's picked up a strain in training, he's not going to be able to make it. He's just pulled out. The England team are notorious for lads just dropping out when it comes to international
breaks.
Welsh
won't do it, though. The Welsh lads won't do it.
We got four. And that's the concern for me. If one of them picks up a knock, you know, especially if it's Joe Roden or Ampadu, they're so important. And Pascal's not ready yet to come back in. So that's a concern. So I'm worried about that a little bit. The Chelsea game, I think a performance is more important than anything else, just from a confidence and momentum perspective. Leeds do put in a really good performance against them and get knocked out. As long as the performance level is good, I think the momentum keeps moving forward then. Yes, I'd love to see us stuff them. And I think the Chelsea on their day are very beatable. They're a bipolar club. They're brilliant one week and rubbish the next week. But I don't think we're going to win the FA Cup. I think we can joke about a cup run. We can say that all we want. We always wanted a cup run, but not this year. This year we need to get promoted, and this year we've got a title to chase down. And I'd rather we just had that in our crosshairs and we focused on that. I don't want the FA Cup to be a distraction. And I think if we do get Scum in the next round, then it does become a distraction, because it becomes about that game and not the bigger picture, which is promotion, you know.
Yeah, Michael Brown makes a great comment here. Sheffield United reached the FA Cup semi-finals last season and were promoted.
Yeah, and JT said this on Joe's show as well about you win that game, it's momentum as well. And I get that and I appreciate that. I always just have that little lazy pessimism in me that if anything's gonna get in the way, that's the blip. And I want to just clear all that crap out of the way and just have a straight, clear run at the title.
Kenny, I'm not sure I completely agree with this. I think we've got to get our eggs in the basket before we even consider what this squad will look like in a Premier League outfit. Again, get where you're coming from. I'm going to the Chelsea game, so obviously I'd love to see us win, but I'd also be more happy to see us be promoted, I think. Well, naturally, we all would, I'm sure. But yeah, I'm not sure where I sit on that. I think it's a little bit early. A little bit premature to be gauging where we're going to be next season. I think there's still a lot of work to do, and I think there's still going to be twists and turns. There's going to be times, I think, when we're still going to probably drop out of that top two before the end of the season. But if I was to ask you all now, where do we finish this season? And you don't have to stick by it. I'm not going to clip it. Just based on current form, and it's all right to be wrong, you know. People can say, look, people could say to you, you said we're going to finish first, you said you're going to finish second. But that's where we feel where we are now based on our form and what's going down. Where do you think we finish this season in the Championship? Carl, I'll start with you because I know you love these questions.
I'm going to stick with top, 4 points clear of Leicester in second place. I'm standing by it. I said it on Joe's show a couple of weeks ago. JT turned around and said, that's a 16-point swing we need to do. Well, we're over halfway there for that 16-point swing. So, yeah, I'm
only 10 more, 10 more folks to get to where you are.
Mm. Well, yeah, it's all right. Like, it's doable, very doable. This could have rattled the hell out of Leicester. It certainly rattled their fans. So,
yeah. Bryn, fuck off. I don't believe in fate. I've just told you that if you've been listening for the last hour. Don't jinx
yeah.
it.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, players don't watch what we do. So, yeah. You know.
Yeah. Jer?
I have a mate who still blames me for Man City winning the title over Manchester United when Aguero scored that last-minute goal against QPR because we were in a pub and I was sitting behind him and went, oh, that's you guys have won this now, haven't you? And then Aguero scored and he lost it with me. Now, I was behind him. But he lost and he still holds me. He still blames me for it. He still holds me responsible for Manchester. Really. We were sitting in the pub and crumbling.
Just had a word in Aguero's ear.
Yeah, I'm in middle of Dublin. I'm going to just put it in his head now. I'm to blame. I've said top two all year. I'm sticking with top two. I don't care if it's first or second. I would love to see us lift the trophy on the final day. Ultimately, I don't care. I want us to get promoted automatically. I don't want us to go into the playoffs because the playoffs. I think top two. I've said it all year, top two, and I think we'll get top two. And I agree with you, Luke, as well. I think there will be weeks between now and then where we do drop to third. But then I think ultimately, and I think hopefully Southampton keep going the way they're going. Although I watched Southampton yesterday and they are a very, very good side that are just not getting any luck right now. They had a chance to, when their subs came on, Rotwell, I think, or Rot something came on and had a great chance to bury it in the bottom corner, down the middle of the goal and put the ball straight in the keeper's hands. So they'll go on a run again. Like, I've no doubt, unless Martin gets completely rattled and it falls apart. But I think if they calm themselves, they'll get a run again. And we've got a good run as well. Leicester have to play Southampton. Southampton have played Leicester and Ipswich. Ipswich probably the cleaner run through. We have Southampton on the final day. But I think whatever happens, wherever Leeds are, I think getting to the last day of the season, it'll be locked in, either locked in third or locked in second or first. So I think automatic.
Interesting you say that. You think that if you feel they've got a cleaner run through, Jer. I've just opened a link here that breaks down the final.
They've now the game from, I think, in there as well.
Yeah, so Leicester have got average league position of opponents up to the end of the season is 11.8. Right. Leeds average league position of opponents 14.5 up to the end of the season. Ipswich 12.4. So that suggests we've got, this is based on current league positions.
Yeah.
Average league position is 12.4 and Southampton 10.6. So Southampton have got the tougher run, followed by Leicester, followed by Ipswich. And we've officially, according to
I look at it from the top four sides because they're the sides that right now are the games that you need to win. Because I said it earlier on the season, losing to Leicester or losing to Ipswich doesn't lose you a title. It's losing to Rotherham and Southampton and Stoke that you blow the title on it. But I think now you've got to this part of the season where these are now 6-pointers. You win and you beat them, now you've got a gap because they've missed a week and it's one less game to go. So it's a case of whatever the points are, it's one less game, it's one less game, it's one less game, and it's getting harder and harder to close those gaps. If you look at Ipswich outside of Southampton, they don't have any of the top three teams now. Between now and the end of the season. If you look at Leicester, they have Ipswich and Southampton, two of the top four. Leeds have got Southampton, you know, and then Southampton have Leicester and Ipswich. So from playing the top sides, and I don't think Ipswich have beaten the top sides this year, top four, any top three teams this year. I could be wrong.
Yeah, and I think the other thing's worth noting as well, whilst we've got a lower average, that means we're playing a lot of teams in the relegation fight as well.
Have to beat them.
You know,
they're the harder games, I think.
Yeah, they've got stuff to play for. Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday away aren't going to be tough games, man. Yorkshire Derbys, you know, and both playing all right at the minute in terms of their seasons. They're probably in a bit of form, probably when we wouldn't want them to be, really. But,
I think next week's big against Huddersfield in one sense, and that's to see what the Leicester game does to Leeds. Does it give us a real fuel behind us to drive on? Or
can we manage the emotion of that game and bring it back down and do a professional job against Huddersfield? And that's why that game is, not because it's Huddersfield, but that's why that game is important to see. Like, this, there was a lot of emotion on Friday night. Can Leeds balance that out and go and do the jobs they need to do? It's not over yet. There's still 12 games to go. You know, we've got to still be calm. We've got to keep our heads. We've got to be professional. Again, I've been saying it for weeks, step by step, game by game. Just take it every single game as it comes. Farke does that. He talks about the 2 points per game. Doesn't talk about the league table. If he keeps doing that, we're fine. So that's why I think next week's probably a big game, just in terms to see where the emotion level is and can Leeds get focused. The Chelsea game in the middle might actually be a help for that, because it breaks up the two, you know, and it might be a leveler as well. So,
yeah. Just going back to the game really quickly, then, before we start to finish up, who's your man of the match, Cal?
Jesus, it's probably the hardest one to pick this week, because
I felt it was.
Like we were saying earlier, like the front line was very much limited to the last 10 minutes because they were essentially marked out of the game. But if we're going to look at anyone, I don't know. Like, it, I don't think anyone stood out in a way where
well, as a unit, didn't
they? Yeah. I think everyone kind of chipped together and everything like that. And if I was going to say anyone, I'd probably say, I know, Ampadu. He was solid enough. Started bringing the ball out from defence when we were kind of losing it from the short playing out and stuff like that. He just kind of took it upon himself to start driving forward a bit. Archie, for his adaptability, went from right back to left back.
Yeah.
People say, like I saw a dude saying that your man, Mavididi or whatever his bleeding name is, gave him a torrid time. I was like, he's a 17-year-old kid. Playing up against a bleeding professional of about 6 years who's played at the top level. It's like, you know, give the kid a break. He's 17.
He's
not even his position. Like,
I felt this was a really, really tough one to pick him out of the match, simply because the whole team worked for each other, and it needed that for us to get a result. And you know, there wasn't anybody stood out much. I think for me, it would probably have been, and it's probably going to ruffle a few feathers here, I thought Ilan Meslier had his best game of the season. Other than Leicester away, when he made that absolute world-class save, it was incredible as well. Jer, do you have any different thoughts on who you thought was man of the match?
I think it's a toss-up. Or
player of the match, sorry. Player of the game, whatever they call it.
I did at the start of the season, got dogs abuse for it, but anyway. I think it's a toss-up between three that stood out to me. I thought Meslier would make some very big saves, big moments in the game. I keep saying football's about moments, and he made some massive moments in that game. Glenn Kamara, I thought, was phenomenal in the middle of the park. Just the work he does off the ball and blocking passing lanes and getting close to players to remove options of passes. I think he's very, very good at that. He screens very well. And when he gets the ball at his feet, you're not getting it off him. Just bang, get it away. And he sent Dewsbury Hall for a duck a couple of times as well, just dropping his shoulder and sending the wrong way. And I just love that moment. That's his one move that I could watch all day. Is that little drop of the shoulder. And I thought when Bamford came on, Jorginho Rutter changes the entire game. I thought that's when he came into his absolute peak. So there's three there for me, but I thought for me, I would have picked Glenn Kamara. Archie, adaptability and growth in the game as well, moving across the left back. I saw somebody put a post out saying Archie has solved our left back positions. Like, relax, it was 10 minutes. Just calm down. Calm down. Sure. You know, we're not there. We need to go buy a left back, and we know that. We all know that. But I thought Glenn Kamara was brilliant. I think he's very important to that midfield. Groove is very good in terms of last ditch tackles, but you don't see Glenn Kamara having to make last ditch tackles, which means his positioning is always on point. I thought he was phenomenal in the game.
Yeah, Danny from Not Another Leeds podcast says, when Archie scored, his pants were off, and he did it in the form of a caveman hacker.
I may have shouted some things about Archie Gray that you're not allowed to say about 17-year-olds that you really shouldn't be saying. There was lots of Archie Gray something said in my sitting room. But yeah.
Good job, it was just you and the dog then.
She just come to the door and she's like, you all right? And I'm like, no, don't come in for a while.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
Yeah. Rysel 1919 says he's loving life at the moment, been a Leeds fan, but what he's concerned is some people talking about Premier League this early, taking our eye off the ball, thinking we're up already, long way to go. We can win the league. All fair comments. I think we do need to stay focused. We need to be going to these teams that, shall we say, lesser based on league positions, and actually going and actually not being complacent and not turning up thinking we've just beaten the top of the league. You know, we're playing a relegation, it's a team in a relegation battle, and actually putting the same amount of effort and the same amount of meaning into each and every game. I think we've got 12 left now, so 12 cup finals. We win every game we go up. It's as simple as that. It's in our hands now, which it hasn't been all season up until last week, where actually we are actually in the driving seat. We've had a lot of work to do to get here, and I think it'd be a shame to take the eye off the ball, so to speak.
I don't think
no pun intended.
I don't think we do. I think it's okay for us to be like that. And I actually, do you know what? It might create a pretty nice carnival atmosphere in Elland Road that players will enjoy playing in front of. Daniel Farke will not let these players take their eye off the ball. And if any of them do, they won't be in the team. Yeah. And that will be, and there's depth there. You know, if any of the wingers decide to start dialing it in, Dan James comes back into that side. If Pirro starts to dial it in, Bamford comes back in. If Bamford dials it in, Pirro comes back in. There's options there now. You got players coming back from injury as well. Pascal will be back after international break. That gives us another option there. So if the midfielders take their eye off the ball, Ampadu goes back into midfield, Strout comes back in centre back. That team is still strong. That's still a really strong side. So they can't. The way they've been this year and the way that team is being picked, every single player knows you have to keep your place in that team. You have an off day, someone else is taking your spot. And do you want to be on that pitch on the final day of the season or not? That's the goal, is to make sure you're there on that pitch the last day of the season, starting that game. These players have lived for these moments. A lot of these players haven't won things. A lot of these players will be living for this moment. The experienced players, the likes of Liam Cooper, are going to be massive in that dressing room now because he's been there. He's done that. He knows what it was like to get so close under the first season of Bielsa and the disappointment of what happened after that. And then he knows how much it felt to get over the line the final day. The second season, we won the league by 10 points. So those people in the dressing room are going to be very, very important at this point. But Bamford as well have gone through that experience that are going to be hugely, hugely important. Farke also, he knows what he keeps saying. He's done it before. He knows what he's doing. He'll manage this. It's in our hands. It's in our hands. And if we don't go up, we will only have ourselves to blame. And if we do go up, there was a video shared years ago. I keep sticking my head. I'm trying to find it. And it's like a 1500 meter race around the Letex track. And there was this dude who was just miles behind everybody who just starts moving. And you can just see him catching up on people as they go around the track. As he gets to the last turn, he just bypasses everyone. And
yeah, seen it.
To win. It's like, if we win the league, that's how we've done it. That'll be how we've done it as well. But Farke is not going to take their eye off the ball. And as I said, if they do take their eye off the ball, there's replacements there that can come in and step up.
Yeah, and I think that's goes back to the initial points we made about Farke trusting his squad now as well, which means we're in a good position to actually have replacements pretty much in every position now that we could trust to come in and do a job. You know, from every position on the field now, I think we've got somebody pretty much that we could trust to come in and do enough, I suppose, to get through these games. But also the atmosphere around the club again and the feeling and the buzz and that they're actually a group of mates again, similar to the Bielsa promotion and the season that we felt that they were actually a bunch of mates playing football together, not that they were working as footballers and actually become friends. And it does feel like that very much again when you're seeing all these, you know, Wilson's been given a bit more of a free rein with his tweeting and his videos as well on social media, which is great to see. It's just a real nice position, a nice place to be in. And, you know, I, for one, can't remember, other than the Bielsa years, it being quite like this before. Certainly in my time, and it's obviously social media wasn't about when we were up in Europe and stuff. So certainly in the last 20 years, I would say it's probably the second time we've probably felt like this, which is really, really nice, really, really nice to see.
Luke, can we talk about the goals?
No, go for it.
No, I don't want to. Carl wants to, but I want to also do about Carl stuck it in.
Although a great finish by Roberts, I'll just cover quickly. Great finish by Roberts, right place, right time. I think that's the idea with how Farke wants to play with fullbacks. We've seen it with Junior Firpo, get that fire up and have a pop. Archie Gray, I'm delighted he got that goal. And I just wanted to say that the look of pride on Eddie's face when the camera panned to him in the stand was just, it filled me heart with joy, just to see that look on his face. It was class.
He's had a tough couple of weeks, Eddie has.
So yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah,
for family.
And then obviously poor old Dan James getting it robbed off him from Patrick Bamford's knee.
I don't think it goes in if it doesn't hit Paddy's knee, by the way.
No, I don't think it does. No,
no. You ever say
it? Yeah, because Paddy came out and he said he asked Dan where he was going with his effort, and he said keeper side. So, you know, it's not going in unless it hits Bamford. But I just wanted to touch on those just real quick because it's a bit of a monumental day weekend for Archie Gray as well. Regardless of the deflections, it's a 17.
It's his goal.
Did you see?
Did you see his
interview after saying, "I don't care that it wasn't my goal. I'm just happy to win it." The atmosphere says he doesn't ever remember it being so loud in Elland Road since, and he's been a fan all his life and all that. It's just so nice to hear, and it's just rattling everybody but Leeds fans. Leeds fans are lapping it up, as rightfully should be, and every other fan of every other club. Also, it's not every other club. That's probably a bit harsh. Any other club that's in this promotion battle with us, they're just crying it in. So.
There was two Luke with the Archie Gray goal that I looked. There's the Leicester fan who shared the picture, but look where Archie Gray's shot is going without the deflection. Is like going, yeah, it looks like it's going in the bottom right corner, the far side of the goal. It looks like it's going right into the corner. It's like that's where it looks like it's going. And the rule has always been it's shooter's goal. The shot's on target, it's the shooter's goal. No one has taken that goal away from Archie Gray except for Sky Sports, who couldn't take it away from him quick enough. Like there's the whole dubious panel. Board thing that they have, dubious goals panel that decide whether goals are those kind of.
But they gave Philogenes.
Sky Sports decided we're not even going to wait for that. They had some young fella down at the touchline running around telling everyone it was an OG. It's going down as an OG. It's going down as an OG. They could not wait to take his moment away from him. I looked at Live Score. I've looked at Sofa Score. I've looked at all the different apps. Archie Gray's the name on the score sheet. It was shot was on target. It's Archie Gray's goal. And the Dan James one, I think everyone was just saying whack it, just whack it and see what happens. And I think maybe if Bamford's not there, I think it goes in off the defender's knee either. I think it hits off one of the two of them. I think Dan James is aiming for a smack off somebody.
Almost ice hockey-esque.
Sort of. Ping this off somebody. Yeah, I'm going to smack it hard enough that if anyone sticks their foot out with this, it's going in the back of the net. So,
but he had a belt. He took a belt.
He got to celebrate on his own, and Dan James got to celebrate. So they both got to celebrate, which is nice.
Bamford, Mr. Dodo says it. Bamford ran off on his own to celebrate it as a striker, and everyone ran over with Dan James, and he was just over on his own to celebrate.
Did you see his comments?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it.
He said he turned around and everyone had gone the other way, and he said, "I felt like a bit of an idiot," but I'm like, "Ah, you celebrate your goal, pal. You have your little moment in that corner of the pitch, and let Dan and the rest of the lads have their moment. Everyone got a moment. Let them all have it."
Yeah.
There's a good picture on Twitter or X or whatever, and it's just basically Paddy just standing there like this on his own, and you're like, ah, fair play to him. He could take the mick out of it as well, you know?
Yeah, absolutely class. Look, we've been on for absolutely ages, but I'm sure we could talk about Leeds United all day till the cows come home and whatever, but we all have got Sunday dinners to cook, I assume, and other things we've got to do with our Sundays. But, Jer, thank you ever so much for joining us. If you don't already, I'm sure you do, but go give Jura follow at Leeds United The View. Myself, I don't know who's on actually, but ought to know better. We'll be back on Tuesday night doing a bit of our main pod and a preview of Chelsea and probably a bit about Huddersfield on there as well. If you don't already, please do like and subscribe and enjoy what's left of your weekends. I've just got one picture just to share for you really quickly that was sent in by Danny. From Not Another Leeds podcast, and it's in relation to this. Lee Fryers asked me to find that bird to recreate it every game. It brought us luck. The bird that shot on my hand is Man Club T-shirt. So Danny's very kindly sent this little meme in.
I was going to ask, what's her name, Luke?
The amount of people that asked how much I paid for it and all that was people have got me. They've got me all wrong. I'm telling you. We'll leave you with that little meme, and we'll see you on Tuesday night. Thanks ever so much for joining in with all your comments, and as I said before, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Cheers. Thanks, everyone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Thank you for listening to another Otto Know Better podcast, the independent Leeds United podcast. You can engage with us via our socials on YouTube and Twitter at the address @OttoKnowBetter with your thoughts on the show or subjects you'd like us to discuss. You can even join us live and have your say while we're recording on our YouTube channel for the main weekly show and the Berardi and Coke after-match podcasts. We have 3 years' worth of content you can listen back to, from interviews with former Leeds players and managers to Hollywood stars. Maybe choose carefully which match reviews to check out, though. Remember to subscribe on whichever app you choose to follow us on.